Iceberg babies and frosty folks, scout out the condition of the bergy hole. Waft away the thick and heavy biofrost. And this podcast is going to work my neck, my back, my pink snow, and my friction crack.
Ooh, let's get nude in this sleeping bag and talk tall to me.
It's for survival, I swear.
I swear, science.
Welcome back. I am Omen Thomas Said.
And I am Nick McGill.
Together we are Feckless Momes.
And this, my little penguin nibbles, is Talk Tall to Me.
An experimental cordialing on the Glacierette of Prog Rock, in which Northern Nick and Open Season Omen will trudge the crisp permafrost looking for signs of life displayed by each and every track that rough ice rock band Jethro Tull have ever cleaved off from their frozen bulk. We will tickle the triple point tremor of bassist Tony Levin. We will gravitate to the glace ancienne of guitarist Gary Green. And we will be baffled by the bawling banshee of keyboardist Billy Sherwood. And if we can break off the ballycatters and crunch the corn snow, we may one day feel the pale gaze of the ice-fat instrumentalist, the sludge-cake singer, the snowbound Scotsman, the Vin Scavler vagabond, the permafrost performer, the breathing whole black poolian, Ian Articular Anderson.
What was Vin Scavler? What's that?
Vin Scavler is a term I found. I was like, there can't possibly be that many terms when it comes to ice.
Mm.
And then I discovered the Encyclopedia Arctica.
Oh, cool.
A 15-volume unpublished reference work that was compiled from 1947 to 1951.
Did you say 14 volumes? 15 volumes?
15 volumes, yep.
Good Lord.
It's a lot. And I'm just looking up what you...
Vin Scavler? Sounds Nordic.
I'm sure it is. Oh, Vin Scavler, see, scaffold.
Great, now you have to go back to the S's.
Yeah. Scaffold, a steep snowdrift. This borrowing from the Scandinavian would appear, in effect, to take the place of borrowing Zagstruga from the Russian.
Hmm. All right, then.
Yeah, it's a snowdrift.
Snowdrift. All right.
Nick, a bit of an unusual affair this very episode.
That's right. A bit of a departure before we dive into Nightcap next week. This is a cover of a Pink Floyd song.
Yes, yes. I don't think we've ever covered a cover on this. In fact, I have to prepare myself.
What are you drinking?
I'm drinking spiced hot chocolate. Non-alcoholic beer, Athletic Brewing Company.
Shut up. Oh, that sounds amazing.
Mmm. You would like it.
Is it like a stout?
Yeah, it's an easy, slightly chocolatey, slightly spiced stout. It's really nice.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Sounds real good.
What are you drinking, Nick?
Oh, I'm just drinking a homemade booch. This edition is grapefruit, pineapple, ginger.
Wow. That sounds amazing.
It's nice and tart. The ginger comes through, as does the grapefruit. It's nice.
Nice. So, we are talking about a cover today, and
sure. It
is a cover that was off of a tribute album?
A tribute album for Pink Floyd. The album itself is called Back Against the Wall, which was released in 2005. It was then re-released in 2007 called Rebuilding the Wall. And it's basically multiple artists recreating The Wall, the Pink Floyd's The Wall, and the one that we are covering, track number two, The Thin Ice. My guess is most likely because of Skating Away on the Thin Ice of the New Day. They were like, oh, well, Ian Anderson should do that.
Sure.
So this falls well out of our time frame. This is 2005 when this was released, recorded.
Wow.
chronologically, we just finished what, 91? Is that when Catfish was?
Yes.
So Catfish was 91. After today, next week, we're going into, as I said, we're going into Nightcap because Nightcap dropped in 93. A lot of the tracks are from before then, but
right.
In terms of its actual issue, it came out in 93. So that's why I decided to drop Nightcap there.
And why are we doing this one here?
Because it reminded me of the first track that we're covering off of Nightcap, Left Right.
That's good enough for me.
Yeah, they start very similarly. And that's honestly, that's literally all I went on, rather than throwing it at the very end of the podcast.
So, of course, The Wall by Pink Floyd, released in 1979, mm-hmm. one of the most highly regarded concept albums.
Very iconic.
In rock history, details the early troubles, middle troubles, and late troubles of a rocker named Pink Floyd,
mm-hmm.
of a rocker named Pink. Not to be confused with Pink, the actual rocker.
Right. But she has an exclamation point for the I, is that right?
Yes.
Is that why, how yeah, we can yeah, differentiate?
Yeah. That's how we can differentiate, yeah, through punctuation.
Pinctuation.
Pinctuation. Wow, reading through the history of the recording of The Wall, it just threw into stark light for me how relatively drama-free the lives of the band members of Jethro Tull have been. For all the drama and all of the, you know, intrigue that we've discovered in the history of Jethro Tull, you couldn't find, you know, if you distilled all of it down to a single moment, mm-hmm. it would not be as dramatic as any given day in the recording process of The Wall.
Yeah, that does not surprise me at all. And to put this on a chronological comparison, you said The Wall was 79. Stormwatch was 79 as well.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. The third of our folk trio, if we call it that.
Yeah, and we can.
We can, and have.
We did.
And will. Do you want to talk personnel on this song, on this track?
Oh, personnel. I think it's interesting to look through it. I mean, this whole tribute album really is kind of a hodgepodge of prog rock peoples.
A hodgepodge of who's who's, I would say.
A whom's whomst.
who's podge.
Tony Levin, bass playing on this song, has worked with Peter Gabriel and was a member at various times of King Crimson.
And also the Liquid Tension Experiment, which is one of my new favorite band names ever.
Yeah. Jay Shellen, drums. He's from New Mexico. He's played with any number of groups that I've never heard of, including Murderers Row, Unruly Child. Oh, he's been with Yes.
And Asia.
Yep. Yep. Gary Green, British. Gentle Giant was his prog rock band. And Billy Sherwood on the keyboards from Nevada. Also part of Asia. Also part of Yes. Arc of Life, Conspiracy, The Prog Collective. So all kinds of things.
He's also backing vocals on this track as well, to be noted.
Right.
And also, Billy Sherwood is the producer of this album as well. So I think it might have been his baby.
Gotcha.
Going into the thing.
You know, this album reminds me slightly of, is it Tall Tales?
A Tall Tale, yep.
Yeah. Kind of interesting.
Probably around the same era, too. I had it in high school. Oh, it's To Cry You a Song, a collection of Tall Tales.
Released in 1996.
Oh, wow. Holy cow. I didn't realize it was that much earlier.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I had it, I think, as a cassette in high school.
So actually, in terms of our standard timeline, we're coming up on it.
Yes. True. Very true. Yeah. Maybe we'll do a feckless episode of just kind of like listening through it and taking notes on certain things.
It'd be very, very interesting.
Yeah.
So let's dive in and have a listen to The Thin Ice, a song by Pink Floyd, as performed by these guys and sung by Ian Anderson.
These guys and Ian.
Mama loves her baby, and Daddy loves you too.
Nick McGill.
Omen, did you listen to this prior to this episode right now?
I did actually have a listen to it a little bit earlier this afternoon, mm-hmm. just to get a sense of what it was that we were getting into.
Right, right.
And I've also gone back and listened to the original Pink Floyd version.
Mm-hmm. Pretty close, pretty spot on.
Very faithful, yeah. A couple of things that stand out in particular are the quality of the synth.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like the tribute version, Ian's version, let's call it, the synth in that version sounds more Pink Floyd-ish than the original Pink Floyd track. Like they lean a little bit heavily, more heavily into that like wow sound, that kind of distortion-y sound.
I found, if I remember correctly, just thinking back to that Cry You a Song, Tall Tales, a lot of them feel like caricatures of Tull songs. They like really like they ham the Tull up a little bit, even though it's not Tull playing it.
Sure, yeah.
I wonder if there's some aspect of that. It's like, well, we're not Pink Floyd. We're trying to play Pink Floyd. We're going to put on a Pink Floyd mask. And of course, it's not like Pink Floyd, but...
Well, it reminds me of when Dolly Parton entered a Dolly Parton lookalike contest and came in third place.
Yeah.
The winner was a drag queen, I believe.
Yep.
But yeah, sometimes the imitation of a thing can be more the thing than the thing itself.
Right. There's an energy level of projecting to be the thing as opposed to that, like... calm confidence of being that thing.
If anything, I would say that the cover is a marginal improvement on the song. I do like the singing of Roger Waters on the original track.
Yeah, I do too. His voice, I've never been much of a Floyd fan, but prepping for this, I went back and listened to a couple of albums. I really do like them. They're that really like, they're really mellow prog.
Yes.
It's like if Jam Band and prog had a baby. And it's really nice to just kind of like mellow out to. I dropped so much acid just to experience it. But boy, it was great. The werewolves told me it was fine.
Well, you know, that's a relevant thing to bring up when it comes to Pink Floyd.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's a hint of that psychedelic vibe in the in those tracks. The re-record, the tribute, I actually really like what the flute brings to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, you know, in the original, you have those chords, ooh, baby, and then there's a little space, and you just have like one or two piano chords. Ian fills in just a little touch of some flute tooting, some fluting around.
A little lick, yeah.
And it's gorgeous. It really is nice.
It is. His voice, it feels like he's trying to emulate Roger Waters here, but that flute is just enough. It doesn't take you out of it.
Right.
It's not disrespectful to the original, but it's just enough to be like, well, that's... Because if I didn't hear that flute, I wouldn't necessarily know that that was Ian, to be honest.
I actually had that experience where I didn't know that it was a cover when I first listened to it, and I was like, what? Is this like
it took me a while to figure it out
and it wasn't until the flute came in that I was like, oh, okay, well, this is clearly Ian. Something is happening here with Ian.
Speaking of his voice, so remember time frame, this is 2005,
right?
We had seen them at least once or twice at this point. And he was straining vocally. He was already straining. He was already hitting those tiptoes to really hit those high notes.
Yes.
You can hear it in here. But when he's comfortable, it's good.
I was surprised to hear that this was recorded so late because it is very, very high. This is higher than Ian typically sings at all. Anywhere in Tull.
Even in the height of his high singing in the like, early 80s, late 70s, early 80s?
Right.
This kind of rivals that, I would say.
It does, and it's not like most of the song is down here and then you go up for a high note.
Right, yeah.
The entire song is that do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it sounds great. It sounds fabulous.
It works. It works. I mean, you definitely hear moments, like two or three moments where it's like he had to have a proctologist there to make him hit that note.
Right. Dragon behind you,
the silent reproach.
But for the most of it, when he does come down like just a step or two, it's good. It's really nice to hear him that high.
And on the low end of his voice, I started to hear a vocal quality present. There's only one time that it happens here. I think it's when, with the fear flowing out behind you, he goes down.
With your fear flowing out behind you.
And there's that throaty chest voice that we hear a lot on things like the Zealot Gene.
Mm-hmm.
That is just, I love that sound. I think it's so, so wonderful.
Mm-hmm. He is doing some nice vibrato on his voice here, which is pretty gosh darn rare for Tull.
Of a million tear-stained eyes.
So he's not like blinders on, this is Jethro Tull covering this song, you know?
No, it really, he's, like you said, it's very respectful to the original.
Yeah.
And the big thing that strikes me about it, the thing that makes me struggle to recognize Ian in this right off the bat, is that he's doing someone else's scansion.
Yeah.
One of the most unique things about the way that he sings, and I guess really the way that he writes, is that scansion, the way that he treats lyrics in time, is very unique.
Yeah. There is a smooth fluidity to this one that, if it were Ian, he would have filled it with twice as many syllables. And it'd still be smooth, and it'd still be beautiful and fluid, and it would be great.
Right.
But there, he fits so much more flower into his presentation as opposed to this, where it's meant to be, for lack of a better term, drudging, you know, like
straightforward.
It's very, yeah.
Speaking of the drudgery. Mm-hmm. It is in 3/4.
Oh, I forgot to count. Okay.
And I think that that's part of what gives it that lullaby feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a cradle rocking, but then you realize that something's terribly wrong.
Yeah, it's a disembodied, moldy hand that's rocking the cradle. Yeah.
On a cliff edge.
Yeah. So we've got about a minute of like kind of intro. Ian sings the first verse of it. But then we get a moment where at about one, it goes silent and we get just the piano and the bass that ding, 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 ding.
Yes,
ding.
Yes.
It's really, really delightful. That's the part that to me is like, it's a lullaby. It's nice. We're just going to have a nice little piano moment here.
If you should go skating.
And then that leads into the heavy breakdown for the last about 30 seconds.
As you claw the thin ice.
The playing on it is so clean, particularly the bass.
If you should go skating.
Very audible.
Yeah, it's a slower piece, so it's not, you know, you don't really have the room. It wouldn't be appropriate to do that walking bass runs and all that stuff, but just it's so clean, it's so precise, you can hear every single note.
It ends very abruptly. Which, like the original, because it goes immediately into the next song, it flows directly into it. I mean, like the album itself, it's meant to be consumed altogether.
Right. I was just trying to look, what is the next song? Another Brick in the Wall.
Okay.
Part one.
Yeah.
Oof.
The last thing I have is that baby crying in the beginning. That is what reminds me of Left Right, the opening of Left Right. It's got babies crying, but it's also got a couple of different layers of distorted babies crying. So it's extra weird and creepy. I can't imagine there's any connection between the two songs, but that always reminds me when I hear that baby crying, I'm like, oh, it's that song, but it's not that song.
It's even quite relevant to a lot of Tull tracks, you know, I'm thinking of Queen and Country.
Much of War Child, yeah.
Of War Child, rather, yes. That whole era of Tull, there was a lot of putting in atmospheric sounds.
Yep, minstrel, same thing, yeah.
But yes, Baker Street Muse at the end.
Mm-hmm. I can't get out! Hello, son.
Yep, exactly.
I can't get out!
Yeah, fabulous track. Really interesting to hear Ian singing in a different style.
Mm-hmm.
Really quite refreshing and a reminder that he is more than Jethro Tull.
Even seeing that progression over 40, 50, 60 years of the Tull albums as they've grown and evolved and we've gotten new sounds, it's always Ian.
Sure.
You know, even though it's like a brand new sound, it's always Ian. This really does give us that Ian outside of his comfort zone, in a sense, where you're right. It does. It shows you how good of a magician, how good of a musician he is.
That makes sense.
An audible magician. In terms of being able to take material that he has not himself written and work with it and really use it. And granted, it's like 2 minutes.
Right.
And he's not doing anything other than the singing and the flute. But he's still there. Like, he's still adding enough to it to make it like, oh, this is definitely Ian.
He's Ian-ing.
He's Ian-ing it. Yeah.
I do think that most of what we hear from him that isn't Tull is still very much his work.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really interesting to hear him working at the service of someone else's material.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how much he doesn't bring his ego to it.
It's really, because this song is so short, it's such a tease. I would love to see something more, something a little more in depth of him taking something. And I mean, he has covered like classical pieces and stuff, but it's not quite the same thing. Omen.
Oh, hello, Nick.
Before we get into lyrics and meaning and really kind of discussing the wall, in its whole
speaking of holes,
oh my god, it's Mary.
Master Nick, I've brought you a wee missive, but I don't feel too steady on me feet.
Mary, I see you've decided to try to wrap your feet like they did to poor Chinese women in the one of those dynasties way back when.
Yes, I was inspired. Someone out in the village called me Shovelfoot. And so I bound them up to be as dainty as a gazelle.
It's a good thing you're leaning on that mop for support, because you're going to have to clean up the blood on your way out.
I had to crawl most of the way back from the town. And on my way, I stumbled across a very vibrant toad whom I licked.
Oh, wow, Mary. Buckle up for quite the evening, I would say. Prepare yourself. So I'll take that message. Thank you so much.
I must get back to the Conference of Bears.
Yes, go do that, please.
Woo-hoo!
Wow, thank you, Mary.
Yeah, she really gets into the spirit.
I don't know what spirit it is, but she gets into it.
It moves her, yeah.
She gets into the spirits.
Yeah.
So I have just a teeny tiny little missive from, let's see, this is from Mike B, return writer-owner Mike B.
M. Bizzle, what's going on, Mike? Great to hear from you.
Mike writes in, the subject is Doctor to My Disease.
Oh.
And just a quick little tidbit here. Mike tells us, Catfish Rising had a radio premiere on WNEW, presumably his local radio station. They played several songs, and Ian gave background on each. According to Ian, Doctor to My Disease was, quote, vaguely gynecological, end quote. Ian went on to say he used to practice and still likes to keep his hand in.
Oh my god.
The entire show was funny and a great listen if you can find it. I know I have a copy on cassette somewhere, but can't seem to find it.
Was the phrase vaguely proctological?
Gynecological. Vaguely gynecological.
Vaguely gynecological. That is quite something.
He used to practice and still likes to keep a hand in.
That is too much. That's very naughty English humor.
Yes.
British humor.
As to be expected from Ian.
Thank you, Mikey B. WNEW is, of course, a well-known contemporary radio station in New York City.
New York City.
Oh, New York. Okay, great. Anything else for this half?
That is it for me.
Let's move on to the lyrics.
The lyrics.
Nick McGill.
Omen. Sade.
I think it is time that we talk about the album The Wall by Pink Floyd.
Yes. Yes, you did a little research on that, yeah?
I did a very preliminary little bit of research, okay. And what I found was that the process, actually, process of how it came to be was pretty interesting. So Pink Floyd had had great success with, what was the big one before this?
Dark Side of the Moon.
They'd had a huge success with Dark Side of the Moon. They were touring, you know, crazy, crazy, crazy touring. There were problems within the band. There were problems, you know, each person had problems in their personal life. They were having financial issues. There was a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And there was one gig in particular where the setup was such that the audience was able to be more social. And so they started getting really rowdy and setting off firecrackers.
Wow.
One of the band members, it may have been Roger Waters, refused to play anything after a certain point and just went and sat by the soundboard and said, I'm not going to play the guitar anymore. Or I guess he was the bassist. The guitarist also said he wasn't going to play anymore. So they had a backup guitarist come on and play some blues stuff. And Roger Waters was like, this is some music to go home to.
I just want to do a quick correction.
Please.
So Dark Side of the Moon was 73. Wish You Were Here was 75. And then The Wall was 79. So
okay, great.
Three powerhouse albums right in a row.
So the gig was so bad that one of the band members was talking to his psychologist afterwards.
Wow.
And was saying that he felt like he wanted there to be a wall between him and the audience. He felt so upset and so disconnected that he just was like, I want there to be a wall in between me. And that was the kind of spark of the idea. John Waters went and he created this huge, huge, huge project. Eventually, they brought in an outside producer, Bob Ezrin from Canada, who had worked with Lou Reed, Alice Cooper, Aerosmith, Kiss, Deep Purple, Peter Gabriel, Andrea Bocelli. So anyway, Bob Ezrin helped kind of corral some of these ideas. They eventually ended up with a 40-page script for this story.
Wow,
and did
cool.
A table read like it was a play.
Huh.
The story concerns a rocker named Pink Floyd, or Pink. His father is killed in World War I. His mother raises him under strict supervision and also has her own troubles. And then he goes off to school and is bullied. And then he builds a wall around himself psychologically as he becomes a rock star. And then he has a collapse. And the album ends basically where it begins, with the end of the album beginning a sentence that the beginning out of the album finishes. Isn't this where we came in?
Wow. Interesting.
So very, very concept-y, very proggy in its own way.
Yeah. Huh.
This song, The Thin Ice, is about really his birth, this character's birth, and this cryptic warning of the mother saying, yes, I love you, but... So if we dive into the top, Mama loves her baby, and Daddy loves you too.
Mama loves her baby.
Well, Daddy's dead in this song.
Yeah.
And the sea may look warm to you, babe, and the sky may look blue.
And the sea may look warm to you, babe, and the sky may look blue.
One of the songs in this album has a reference to, I think it's Goodbye Blue Skies. And that is a song about the Blitzkrieg, living through the Blitzkrieg.
Oh, wow. Okay. And we get some ooh, ooh, baby blues here. Ooh, babe.
Ooh, babe.
If you should go skating on the thin ice of modern life.
If you should go skating on the thin ice of modern life.
Interesting imagery.
So skating away on the thin ice of the new day was that climate change, basically, right? That was one of the very first climate change songs.
Yeah. And I think.
And population growth, things like that.
Yeah. The sense that the structure of what was holding everything together is very fragile.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very similar image.
Yeah, right. Right. Modern life stretches things thin, you know. When things were simpler, things were more solid.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's very relatable. I often feel, you know, driving around and you see someone who's destitute and you think, wow, what actually separates me from a state of destitution is a very thin little surface that we like to imagine is very solid, but it isn't.
Right.
If you should go skating on the thin ice of modern life, dragging behind you the silent reproach of a million tear-stained eyes.
Ooh.
Dragging behind you the silent reproach of a million tear-stained eyes.
Why would a baby be dragging a million tear-stained eyes behind it?
Well, reproach is a look of disapproval or disappointment. So is this baby, is Pink Floyd maybe born into some level of status, of wealth or something along the lines where, so those who have fallen through the ice or cannot cut their own path through the ice, they have to go over ice that has already been trod and is therefore more dangerously thin. Maybe they are looking at this character as reproachful, as jealous or something along those lines.
It almost reminds me, because I was thinking, you know, what could a baby have done
right
to deserve reproach? It almost makes me think of, it's sort of a concept of original sin.
That was a thought, yeah.
Just by virtue of being born, you are bad and impure.
Yeah.
And deserving of reproach.
Right. Right. Whew. I have a quote from Roger Waters, actually, about this in an interview with Jim Ladd. Quote, "I think it's about how parents start inducing, almost inject, their own fears and worries into their children from a very early age, particularly in my case when they had just been through a world war or something like that. We all go through devastating experiences and we tend to pass them on to our children when they're very young."
Wow.
I mean, Ian, and I'm assuming Roger Waters, born in what?
Mid-50s.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, I mean, really just after the war. Just after World War II.
Roger Waters was 43, actually.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh, so he really was, you know, he really would have experienced the Blitzkrieg as a baby, whether he remembers it or not.
Yes, right. He was born in World War II. He would have heard plenty about World War I, because World War I was the teens.
Sure.
And World War I and any form of depression. I was listening to a history podcast the other day, and World War I left everybody just broke ass, except for the United States. The United States is the only one who won World War I. So,
Interesting.
So England, you know, the UK was seriously hurting after World War I. So,
yeah.
So his parents would have made that very clear and evident.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and just, you know, like what you're talking about parents passing on their trauma, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the reason I've always steered a little bit wide of Pink Floyd, because so much of it is about like these deep, disturbing traumas that get, you know, deeply embedded into the psyche and kind of take on a life of their own.
Mm-hmm.
As you get further into the album, when he completes his wall, he locks everybody out. He locks his hotel room. He's not going to go and do anything. And he kind of slips into this delusional state, and the band with a doctor break in, and the doctor gives him a shot of something that's going to make him able to perform the show that night, which he does. That's where Comfortably Numb comes in.
Yeah.
Which was also a reference to one of the real band members who was injecting themselves with something to overcome the pain from hepatitis, I think?
Oh, Jesus.
Which kind of left him like stoned as he was playing.
Mm.
But in the story, this drug puts him on a huge psycho-like trip, a hallucinogenic trip, and he imagines himself as a fascist dictator who's sending, you know, his goons out to beat people up and destroy minority groups and all this stuff. And And at the end, he kind of finally breaks down and he puts himself on trial. I mean, it really goes crazy. And it's just like, I think for me, something about looking that deep into the darkness, I'm just a little like, no, thank you.
Yeah, right, right.
I'm afraid of getting too into it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. I definitely get that. There is a complexity and a depth to Floyd's music that is in a different way from Tull. Not that Tull's not complex and deep.
No, but it is those things in an intellectual way, whereas I think Pink Floyd is deep and complex in a...
emotional.
Psychotic way.
Yeah, psychological, emotional way. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
With that Roger Waters quote in mind, let's continue lyrically here.
Right. Dragging behind you the silent reproach of a million tear-stained eyes. Don't be surprised when a crack in the ice appears under your feet.
Don't be surprised when a crack in the ice appears under your feet.
So basically like, hey, you just came into this world, but guess what? It's going to get messed up and you're going to fail and have a terrible, terrible time. Welcome, baby.
And things may look great before this happens.
Not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. You slip out of your depth and out of your mind with your fear flowing out behind you as you claw the thin ice.
Bam, bam, bam.
You slip out of your depth and out of your mind with your fear flowing out behind you as you claw the thin ice.
You are clawing for your life, trying to get out of the water that you have plunged into.
But it's so thin that you can't even get a purchase on it.
It just keeps breaking. Yeah.
You know, it's the first little stanza, Mama Loves Her Baby. It is in a kind of a rhyming scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Baby two, babe blue, baby blue, babe.
Mm-hmm.
The next bit completely abandons any sense of a rhyme scheme.
Yeah.
Skating, life, reproach, eyes, ice, feet, mind you, ice.
Yeah. Yeah, the first is almost that lullaby feel.
Yeah.
And the second is just like, these are the facts of life. I'm going to tell you this. And it's, I mean, I can totally see it for people before World War I and probably before World War II, just not expecting it. Like, we didn't know Russia was going to invade Ukraine. We didn't know the Israel and Palestine right. thing was going to blow up like this. They've been at each other since
the creation of the state of Israel.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. If we could only predict the future, we'd be a lot better able to handle it. Or maybe we wouldn't. I don't know.
Yeah.
But what I think, what makes this song so kind of scary for me is there's this implication that it's like, if we are the baby as listeners, I feel like the song is telling us that it's also our fault.
Mm.
Somehow.
Interesting.
Or that there's a guilt associated with it. I think I'm centering on that, the silent reproach of a million tear-stained eyes.
Yeah.
Maybe it's, you know, you were saying that perhaps it is this idea of affluence, that a baby born with a silver spoon in their mouth, as they say,
yeah,
would have reproach. I wonder if there's a sense that, oh, you're too young to have lived through these horrors that we had to live through.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
And so I sure hope you experience some horrors of your own.
That just occurred to me. I don't think it's necessarily a position of affluence now. I take it all back.
It's innocence.
Yeah, we're looking at you reproachfully, almost jealously, because you didn't have to deal with this. But buckle up, friend, because you're about to fall through the ice because of the housing bubble, because of student loans, because of healthcare.
There's almost that sense of, you know, in medicine or in the school system, you know, it happens all over the place. But, well, you know, we don't like that the older folks who are in this system treat the younger ones, you know, abuse the younger people. But that's how it always was. And there's that sense of like, well, that's what happened to me.
Right.
So I need to get my comeuppance by abusing someone under me.
Yeah.
That's a mentality that was really ingrained for like the boomer generation,
right.
even the ones before that.
Yeah.
And this kind of feels like that. It's like, well, we suffered. So almost, oh, you're a baby? We're going to create a world so messed up that yeah. you're going to suffer because we had to suffer.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So that's fair.
It's not let's do something to change it. It's this is the way it is.
Yeah.
Woof.
Yeah, it's creepy. It's creepy.
Yeah. It's depressing. It makes me want to put on the whole album with just the good headphones and just float away for about an hour.
In the bath.
In the bath. I will never come back from that. I'll be destroyed.
Nick, you said you'd been listening to some of the other work mm-hmm. of Pink Floyd. Mm-hmm. What stuck out to you? What have you enjoyed?
Well, I went to I did the classics. You know, I basically did these three. I did Dark Side of the Moon is the other one that I really focused on. I did Wish You Were Here as well, but
yeah.
Dark Side of the Moon has that not stigma per se, but it's tied to that, like, oh, it matches up perfectly with The Wizard of Oz. Like,
sure.
It's not like I watched that, but going back and listening to these songs that I've heard in passing, like listening to classic rock radio stations, but hearing them in the full context of the album, hearing them couched with these other pieces, it does them so much more of a benefit to hear them all together, you yep, know? I mean, absolutely. It's the same thing with the Tull song, you know? Like, you pick out anything and it's like, yeah, that's a banger, but what about the first three before that? And then you hear that song and there's just a sonic context to it that really adds to the experience.
And that's why I think the original version of this song, of The Thin Ice, is so sparse, because it is the calm before the storm.
Right.
It gives the ear space to really like be like, oh my God, what is coming?
Right. It's track two, and the first track is like, I think 30 seconds and very quiet.
Yeah.
So it leads into that, and we do get that break in here at like, what was it, 130, roughly 140 is when we get that bow, we get the electric, we get the drums, we get some really heavy bass in there.
Right.
And that's hitting that cold water, that's plunging into the water, and that's where it all falls apart.
Really, for the first time of in the album.
Absolutely, yeah.
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 I think I like Dark Side of the Moon a little bit more than The Wall.
Mm-hmm. I think I do too, just sonically.
Money, it's a guess.
What shall we be talking about next week? I know it is a little light music.
Nope.
Nope.
It's Nightcap.
I know it's a little Nightcap music.
It's Nightcap. We are talking, we're not going disc one, track one with Nightcap. What we're doing is we're picking and choosing, because like I said last week, a lot of, particularly disc one, a lot of the songs are very similar sonically to War Child, very similar sonically to A Passion Play. They're kind of like if they had a baby. So I don't want to go into every single one. So next week is the only one we're pulling off of disc one from Nightcap. It's disc one, track seven. It is the track Left Right.
Left Right.
Left Right. Yeah.
Well, until then, if you don't want to be left out of our Discord chat, you should join our Patreon at the shockingly low rate of $5 a month. You can have access to all of our wonderful Tall Skull family. You can have access to folks like Mike B and his brain. You can't have his brain, but you can have access to his words. It's a great opportunity to connect with people internationally who love Jethro Tull.
All sorts of stuff going on in that Discord, Tull and otherwise. It's a great little community. You also get access to the two additional podcasts a month. That is Feckless, which is a hodgepodge cornucopia of random content.
Yes.
And Outtake Tull to Me, which is cutting room floor material that honestly makes me giggle every time I put that podcast together. And for an additional fee, if you want to be a Tull Skull Plus member, You get the video feed. You get the video of Omen and myself talking.
Nick is wearing a charming tie. Actually, I really like your outfit.
Golden tie, little pinstripe black vest, black button down, and I've got my little ammonite.
An ammonite?
Hanging from the neck there.
That looks like a fossil ammonite.
Until next week, I am the crack in your ice. I am Nick McGill.
I am clawing your crack, Omen Thomas said.
We are accustomed to your silent reproach. We are the feckless momes.
And ooh, baby. This is Talk Tell to Me.
Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Mama's gonna buy you a mockingbird.
And if that mockingbird don't fly, Mama's gonna bake you a toxic pie.
And if that toxic pie tastes good, Mama's gonna put you in a box of wood.
And if that box of wood is daft, Mama's gonna get you called up for the draft.
And if you try to 1AO, Mama's gonna leave you in the snow.
And if that field of snow's too wide, baby's gonna witness genocide.
And if that genocide's too wee, Mama's gonna play Talk Tell to Me.
Which is a proud member of the Feckless Momes Audio Network. Now go to sleep!